Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In 1981, Muhammad Ali saved a man from committing suicide. For about 35 years, that's been the reporting. End of story. But after 3 years of talking to eyewitnesses, the LAPD, biographers, and a lone photographer, I think the chapter on this epic Ali miracle is just beginning.
Hey everybody, Dwayne Johnson here to tell you about a new documentary podcast series titled What Really Happened, narrated by award-winning documentary filmmaker Andrew Jenks in coordination with our company, 7 Bucks Productions.
Ali talked Joseph down, but is there more to it? Was Joseph in on it? Was Ali showing the world that he could still talk, much less box? Why did Ali's people say Joseph was a Vietnam vet when in fact he wasn't? Go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your shows to listen to What Really Happened. Available now.
All right, my guest this week is Michael Rappaport, the actor, podcaster, author. He's got a new book out, and he is never short on opinions, and we go through some of his greatest hits. We talk about LeBron James, LeVar Ball, and Lonzo, the New York Knicks, all that covered in more with the great Michael Rappaport. So stick around. That's coming up next.
This is the Vertical Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road,
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
Joining me on the podcast, making his second appearance here on the Vertical Pod, Michael Rappaport, actor. You can see him on White Famous on Showtime. He's a podcaster, got a couple over at Barstool Sports. He's an author now, too. His new book is called This Book Has Balls, Sports Rants from the MVP of Talking Trash. Mike, what's going on, man?
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me back on.
I'm glad you're here. So I told you before we went on, I just ordered the book. It didn't come in time for me to read it before we talked. But give me your best sports rant. What was the one sports rant that you really enjoyed writing about?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I mean, I have one in there called LeVar Can't Ball. I have 23 reasons why LeBron James will never be like Mike. I have the audacity of Muggsy Bogues. I have 3 on the New York Knicks. I have the irony of Charles Oakley. There's a bunch of them. I have the public eviction of Phil Jackson from New York City. There's a bunch. It was a lot of fun writing them. It's been a lot of fun, you know, getting feedback from people. I have one that I really think is funny. Good Men and Bad Pieces, mm-hmm. about the legendary sportscasters, bad toupees. I'm really happy with the book.
Okay, so you touched on a lot of things that I wanted to ask you about anyway. I guess let's begin with LeBron here. And you've been vocal in your criticism of LeBron and the Jordan comparison. Just what is your biggest problem with LeBron James?
My biggest problem with LeBron James is the big three, you know, like that sort of mentality and what he started and the ripple effect of it will leave the NBA in disarray when he's gone. You know, that friends and family banana bolt AAUification of the NBA. Everybody's been trying to catch up with him since he first did it with Miami, and then you know, manipulated it with Cleveland. And, you know, I don't care if they win or lose. I don't think he's staying in Cleveland. And, you know, I had a problem with what Kevin Durant did at first because I didn't think I thought that was the same thing. But he was just following suit. And, you know, LeBron's big three got trumped by the Golden State Warriors' big four. And 3 of those guys were homegrown drafted talent. So, I mean, that's one of them. But, you know, but there's this – it's been everything from, you know, he gave himself a nickname. Who the hell gives himself a nickname? You know, Magic was given his nickname by a writer. Michael Jordan was given his nickname Air Jordan by somebody else. I got my nickname the Gringo Mandingo the right way. I earned it. You know, so he gave himself the nickname King, but a lot of time he acts like a little princess.
Would you have been happier, though? Like, you know, look, the King James title is a self-styled title. He could have chosen, though, the Chosen One, which Sports Illustrated branded him when he was a junior in high school. I mean, would that have made a difference?
Doesn't he have that tattooed on his back?
He might. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, he could have chosen whatever. I'm just saying, like, listen, you know, a lot of the thing about the book is it's ball-breaking 101. Can I curse here?
Yep.
It's shit-talking 101. It's not to be taken literal. You know, like my thing with LeBron, the way it got off of being a basketball thing and personal is that, you know, at the 2011 Celebrity All-Star Game where I'm a former MVP, that's my house, that's my game. The late, great Stuart Scott gave me my trophy. He handed me my MVP trophy. When I infamously shut down T.O., scored 5 points and had 7 fouls. The next year, because I had met LeBron over throughout the years. I met him before he even played an NBA game in New York at Jay-Z's 40-40 Club. And, you know, I met him a couple other times. But for some reason, that year, my kids, you know, I brought my kids over to say what's up to him. They don't ask for pictures. They don't ask for sneakers. And he was rude to my kids in front of me. He turned his back on my kids. And that's when I was like, yo, and I don't know what it is. I have no idea what it's from. This was before I was even in the sports shit-talking zeitgeist. This is before I was on ESPN and, you know, Fox Sports and my own podcast. It was something about him that it was something that he did. It was personal. It was blatant. And I was like, hell no. I've been around athletes and actors for 20 years. No one has ever done that. Ever. Not once, never to me, and definitely never to my 9 and 11-year-old kids at the time.
Okay, well, that sucks, certainly. And on a personal level, I can understand where you're coming from. But some of the stuff you've said over the last few weeks and written about and talked about in your podcast, especially when it comes to, you know, the Super Friends, the Banana Boat stuff. You know, Mike, free agency didn't really even exist in basketball till like the late 80s. So
yep.
Comparing it is difficult. I mean, I guess
I know.
You could,
I know.
And look, I compare it to almost your line of work in that, you know, as an actor, don't you seek out like the best directors, the best cast, the best screenwriters when you're looking for?
Yeah, you do. But the majority of us, there's about 5 to 10 actors or actresses that could go over all that. The majority, and I'm not one of them. You know what I mean? But we're talking about sports and art. It is two different things, but I get the comparison. Listen, people have tried it before. I think we made the conversation last time about, you know, the Paul Pierce, KD, Ray Allen, Big Three.
Yep.
But in my opinion, you know, look at Chris Paul. He left L.A. to go to James Harden. They're not winning jack shit. You know, Dwayne Wade is in the twilight of his career, but he came back to Cleveland. Like, just this ring-chasing thing. And I really think a lot of it has to do with Charles Barkley. The great Charles Barkley, he's on TNT, probably the most well-known, high-profile, sort of a cross-cultural NBA show, right? There's other great ones and all that stuff. Every time, for 10 years, 12 years, however long the show's been on, every time they want to shut Charles up, whether it's Shaq, whether it's, you know, whoever's on there, Kenny, whenever they want to shut up Charles Barkley, they go, you don't have no rings. Mm-hmm. And Charles will always, every single time, it's like a little punch in the face. And listen, how many NBA players right now will ever be revered and have the iconic career that Charles Barkley will have? It's like there's a handful of players that never won a ring. It doesn't mean you're not great. Doesn't mean you're not dope. And LeBron James winning his rings doesn't mean he's like Mike. Doesn't mean he's even better than Kobe. Somehow, like the Kobe Bryant factor, we skip it over, and like LeBron James is all of a sudden better than Kobe. You know, it's like, but so you know, it's this. You know, these rings, it doesn't necessarily, like, is Robert Horry better than Kobe Bryant? He's got 57 rings, Robert Horry.
Yep.
You know, Steve Kerr's got like 19 fucking championship rings. So it's not to say that rings don't mean a lot, but they don't mean everything. You know what I mean? Like, how many players in the NBA off the cuff right now in this current NBA will have as great a career as Charles Barkley? Seriously.
Not many.
Not many. And he don't have a fucking ring. But those kids have watched Charles Barkley get shut up every single time, you know, Shaq or Kenny feels like he's talking out of pocket. Be like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't have no ring.
Isn't that on Charles, like, though, too? I mean, Charles should be looking back at Kenny if that happens and saying, would you trade career? Like, Shaq is different. Shaq was the star of those championship teams.
Right. Kenny Smith is not even – yeah. But for some reason, that's like Charles Barkley's Achilles heel, and I don't think it should be.
And you think guys see that, guys in the NBA see that, and that has an impact on them?
I think that that is one of the things, that consistent thing with Barkley. It's a weird thing, but I think that consistent thing with Barkley, they all grew up watching it. You know, Charles has been doing that show for I don't know how many years now. They've seen it. And it's like, you got to get the rings. I don't want to be like Charles. I don't want to be like Reggie. I don't even want to be like AI. I don't want to be like Karl Malone. I don't want to be like Pat Ewing. Motherfucker, you should wish you're half of those guys I just named.
You know, look, LeBron and the comparisons with Michael, I think he can get close. I think LeBron's probably has five good years left in him, maybe three or four great years.
Which is another thing. Check this out. Every single great athlete, let's just say basketball, basketball player that we just named, every single person in the NBA, Melo, Joakim Noah, Kenyon Martin, doesn't matter. Every single player has suffered from injuries. Now, I don't wish injury on anybody. But for some strange reason, and I articulate this in the book, I don't know what it is, all the tread on the tires, all the Olympics, all the finals, all the carrying the Cleveland Cavaliers, all being the main dude on the Miami Heat, all the carrying these Cleveland Cavaliers, somehow, some way, LeBron James has avoided injury. No sprained ankle, no broken thumb, no nothing. Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, even Lance Armstrong, those guys all had injuries, and those guys were all on Achoo.
Okay. Yeah, okay. But, all right, I figured you were going to go that direction. Do you think that Karl Malone was on something? Karl Malone played 80-plus games.
I just saw Karl Malone.
Every year of his
Karl
career,
Malone
Mike,
still looks like Karl Malone.
Except for one.
Karl Malone, I just saw Karl Malone. Literally, he still looks like Karl Malone. He's built like a brick shithouse. Who's to say? All I know is this. In 2014, when LeBron I might be wrong with the date, but I believe it's 2014, when LeBron went back to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the beginning of the season, if we watched those games when he first went back to the Cleveland Cavaliers, I can't remember who I heard say it. Somebody was broadcasting him. Wow, LeBron doesn't have the explosiveness that he used to have. That summer, that's when those pictures were out. LeBron looked thin. He was on a juice diet. He was on this. Then 2 weeks, he goes, I need to take rest. He's tired. Okay, you need to take rest. You're LeBron. Guy never stops playing. He's always carrying teams. Went to Miami. Back to Miami. Although he made a big to-do about moving back to Cleveland, his family's there, went to Miami, the same town that A-Rod loved, took 2 weeks off, came back bigger, better, stronger than ever, and was back to the old LeBron. I just want to know, since LeBron is so giving and so caring, what is his daily diet? What is his daily diet? Why is this man the only guy who's played as many games as he's played? Not a freaking broken thumb, not a broken ankle. The only time he stopped playing was for 2 weeks for rest. Tell me. I would love to take 2 weeks of rest and gain 20 pounds of muscle.
If he produced a cookbook like Tom Brady, would you feel better about where LeBron is? Because the reality is, Mike, that guys don't test positive for stuff in the NBA. When guys test positive for stuff, it's O.J. Mayo with some sort of illicit drug. It's Chris Anderson with some sort of recreational drug. The NBA doesn't have the same type of PED problem that has plagued so many other sports.
Well, just so you know, the NBA has the worst drug testing policy in all of high-end sports. And then I don't want to go. Listen, this is just the things that I talk about in the book, and the one chapter. The book ain't about LeBron James. The book is sports rants from the MVP of Talking Trash. But because this is a basketball podcast, the LeBron chapter, and because I keep it real and funky, but it like the 20 of the other the reasons why he'll never be like Mike are all lighthearted. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. It's like LeBron is so scrutinized and so like, you know, like he's so protected. And I you know, it's like obviously he should be. He's an icon. He means so much to the fans and all that stuff. I like to break his balls. So that's what I do.
The finals record for LeBron is the blemish against him when you compare it against Jordan. Jordan never lost when he's in the finals. LeBron's lost a bunch of times. But how much of that do you put on LeBron James, though? Because I go back, Mike, to the 2011 finals. Every other series, they were either completely overmatched, yep, like they were in 07 and a couple of times against the Warriors, or it was close, very close, like the last series in Miami against the Spurs. So I don't really fault the LeBron for his record in the finals. Do you hold that against him in the argument against Michael Jordan?
That's the main thing. But I also do think the first time the Miami Heat played the Spurs, Ray Allen, I mean, listen, it's a team game. It's not LeBron versus Spurs. But they didn't get lucky. They you know, it was a good situation. But, I mean, as far as the comparison to Mike, that would be the number one thing statistically. And obviously he's superseded so many different other records. I don't deny how great he is. It's just there's 23 reasons why he'll never be like Mike. And that is the number one back-breaking, spine-tingling thing of the finals thing.
All right, hang on for one second, Mike. If you've noticed me sitting here in front of you with a completely shaven face, all because of my friends over at Gillette, the tip of a Gillette razor blade, I'm telling you, it is so precise, it's measured on an atomic scale. Their blade edges are thinner than a single brain cell. The hundreds of members of their R&D team have spent over 4,700 years combined. How is that possible? Working to make a Gillette shave closer and more comfortable. That's longer than the Egyptian pyramids have been around. Over 1,000 craftsmen and women make Gillette blades in Boston, my town. Meanwhile, another team of folks are putting your blades through more than 60 strict and precise quality checks. Fail just one of these tests and a blade doesn't leave the plant. In other words, the hardworking people at Gillette never stop working to make your blades better. And now that includes the price. Get Gillette blades at their lowest price in years. See for yourself at GilletteOnDemand.com. Gillette, the best a man can get. Pricing applies to select products and is at the sole discretion of the retailer.
Okay, let's move on to the Ball family.
Yes.
Lonzo, a couple of weeks into his NBA career, and there have been some ups and downs on the court. Off the court, it's much of the same. You've got LaVar Ball talking after every game, after the opener. He said, "Who is Patrick Beverley?" after Beverley locked down Lonzo on that night. He said later, "The Wizards should be worried," days before Washington came to L.A. The Lakers won, but Lonzo was 2-for-11 in that game. Is LaVar Ball a problem for Lonzo and the Lakers?
I think that he is a problem for Lonzo and the Lakers, and I think eventually either the NBA or the Lakers are going to shut down LaVar Ball because, number one, he knows exactly who Patrick Beverley is, and if he doesn't, he's going to find out the next time the Lakers play the Clippers. And number two, the NBA doesn't need LaVar Ball, heckling other NBA players. The NBA doesn't need LaVar Ball for ratings. You know, like, it's like the people that know about LaVar Ball are the same NBA fans that would be watching the games with or without him. And the precedent is being set for the next new player to come in the NBA who's got a funny friend or a shit-talking mom or an antagonistic cousin. So should they be interviewed on ESPN after every fucking game? Like, it's like every fucking game you want to hear from this guy? Literally every fucking game. It's like, it's funny, but it's like at a certain point, it's like every fucking game. Like ESPN's, you know, coverage of the NBA is so struggling and looking for some sort of, you know, it factor that they have to go to LaVar Ball. If I was LaVar Ball, I would start telling him, if you're going to interview me every game, you motherfuckers need to start paying me. So, yeah, I mean, he put an X on his back. You know, the Lakers won the game last night. The Wizards didn't play that good. John Wall didn't start the whole thing. Martin Gortat followed up on it. And, you know, yeah, he did put X on his back. And, you know, you're going to have the Dame dollars. You're going to have, he already insulted Steph Curry's, his family. He's insulted LeBron and his kids and Shaq and his kids and so forth and so on. And, you know, at the end of the day, Lonzo Ball is a good player. He ain't all that. You know what I mean? He's not guaranteed to be the rookie of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, we're, what are we, five games in, four games in? So the discussion is too soon to be there. But it's like Lonzo Ball is not all that. That's clear. He's not Magic Johnson. He's not Jason Kidd. Who knows what he'll be? But the expectations and the shit-talking and the antagonistic behavior, this isn't the AAU. And Lonzo Ball, I mean, LeVar Ball, you know, would heckle Lonzo Ball's opponents when he was a teenager in the AAU. And everybody's like, he's a great father. He's a great father. He's supposed to be. We're all supposed to be a great father. Yesterday during the NBA game on ESPN, and Ryan Rucco is my boy. I fuck with Ryan Rucco. He's my friend. And Mark Jackson, I couldn't have more respect and could be more of a fan. But yesterday during the Lakers Bullets game, I say Bullets, sorry, the Wizards, my boy, my friend, Ryan Rucco, and one of my favorite Knicks and NBA players of all time, Mark Jackson, literally were having a fucking conversation about the benefits of LeVar Ball as a parent. They were dissecting LeVar Ball as a father. This is during an NBA game. Are you fucking kidding me? During an NBA game, they're like debating, patting LeVar Ball on the back for being a good father, which is something we're all supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And who's to say that he necessarily is a good father? His kids are repressed. None of them speak for themselves. Not to say that he's not a good father. Obviously, he's present, and that's not the thing. But this is what he's bringing up. Good father, not good father. Who gives a fucking shit? The son's playing in the NBA. Who gives a fucking shit about the father? And next year, there's going to be, trust me, next year and going forward, there's going to be cousins, there's going to be moms, there's going to be mom and dad duos that are going to be like, fuck, if LeVar Ball could do that, I could do the same shit. And then they're going to get into beefs with LeVar Ball and this player and insulting this player. And, you know, it's just, it's turned into a fucking circus. The NBA and the fans doesn't need LeVar Ball there to instigate ratings. And Ryan fucking Rucco, my dude, and Mark Jackson shouldn't be dissecting whether or not this guy's a good parent or not. It's fucking ridiculous.
What do you make of say, the argument that by putting the target on Lonzo's back, LeVar is almost, it's almost useful. I don't want to say helping him, but it's almost useful in getting the best out of an opponent every single night for a rookie trying to make
great.
His way.
Great. Then I can't wait till the next parent wants to put a target on their son back. And then we're going to see how this works.
How much of this, too, my other question was, how much of this, too, do you put on the media? Because LeVar Ball doesn't have a platform unless, like you're saying,
I agree.
They're talking about him. Or, you know, the season opener I thought was ridiculous. When LeVar came just sort of parachuting in on that SportsCenter hit with Stephen A. and Stan
yeah.
Verrett. Yeah,
Verrett.
Yeah, Verrett. So him parachuting
it is their
in
fault.
Like that. Yeah.
It is their fault. I mean, listen, we're all part of it. You know, essentially now I'm part of it, you're part of it. The fact that I entertain the questions is part of it. But, you know, it's like we're like at a certain point it needs to fucking stop. He is not all that. And it's like, and then people are like, well, you're why are you hating? It's like I talk about that in the book. Like, I'm hating because I want the fucking father to shut the fuck up. I'm hating the same reason why Patrick Beverly was in the locker room telling him, get your fucking punk ass out of here. I'm about to bust your ass. This is on the father. But then the father's heckling Patrick Beverly while he's in the stands. It's like, this is not the AAU. You're not going to intimidate NBA players. Because that's what he is. He's essentially like a bully. You know, he's a big dude. He likes to talk loud and all that shit. He's like, you know, who are you going to intimidate? Patrick Beverly? Who are you going to intimidate next? You're going to try to do this shit with, wait till the fucking Golden State. And he's going to say some shit to Draymond. Like, you'll be lucky if one day somebody doesn't go into the stands and like they get into an incident. And then we're going to say, oh, it's too much. And like the whole thing, when it's just, at a certain point, it needs to stop.
What's the
stop
solution
talking
to the
about
problem?
The motherfucker like my girl Michelle Beadle. She's like, I'm not talking about this fucking clown.
Okay, but I'm more asking from a Laker perspective. Like, what should or could
Yo,
the Lakers
we're not
do?
Giving you free tickets. We're you're not coming to the practice. Players only. And then, you know, like, and then Stephen A. Smith would be like, take some fucking pride in yourself. That's another friend. Have some pride in yourself. You need this fucking guy there to, you have to have this conversation every day about a team that's not even making the playoffs. It's wait till the next two or three dudes with charismatic, loudmouth, shit-talking parents, cousins, friends Come on, and then we're going to see what this really turns into.
What'd you think of the way Lonzo's played the first couple of weeks? I mean,
I think he's
a good
player.
He looks like he can play.
He's a good player. He's a good player. Look, I'm not going to name names, but two of my friends who were NBA dudes played in the league, like, they're making a big deal because he passes the ball up the court. Like, he ain't all that. He can't guard anybody. Not to say that the NBA is, like, filled with defensive players, but, like, he has no defensive skill set at all. None whatsoever. He's an unselfish, good player. Chris, who do you think is going to be the rookie of the year?
Ben Simmons.
Okay.
People seem to forget, like, at least in the preseason stuff, people forgot that Ben Simmons was still a rookie. I think it's a slam dunk for Ben Simmons.
Okay, so you're not even the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
So it's like you're not the rookie of the year. You're going to lose a bunch of games in a row. You're not making the playoffs. Why are we having so much conversation about this fucking kid?
I think the big question is going to be, does he turn out to be the best point guard in that lottery class? Because there are, like, five guys that could turn out to be really good players. And this lottery class is going – and this point guard class, it's almost like that Marino quarterback class from the 80s. It's going to be remembered as one of the better ones. Who comes out on top, will be, in some ways, a referendum on Lonzo Ball.
Who do you think? I mean, you know it a little better, and I'm going to be totally honest. Like, five games into the season, let's say five. No one's played more than five. I haven't watched everybody play it. Fultz has obviously got, like, an injury, so, you know, you can't really do a full evaluation on him yet. Based on what you've seen so far, because the Summer League, it was also proven to be a joke.
Yep.
The Summer League, somehow or another, because of fucking Lonzo Ball, what sneakers are you going to wear? What sneakers is he not going to wear? This is the business mind of Lonzo Ball. I'm creating my own sneaker for the culture. But the first time I ever play on basketball court, I'm wearing two, three, four other people's sneakers. This is the business mind of the fucking, you know, big baller brand shit. And then, like, him and this other kid, what's his name? The other rookie on the Lakers?
Kuzma.
Kuzma, like, they were unbelievable in Summer League. And I said this, and people were so offended by it. The big three that I was the sideline reporter of was more intense and more competitive than the NBA Summer League. Mm. The NBA Summer League is a fucking joke. In terms of competition, it's good to get out there. It's good to get reps, to play and all that stuff. But as far as, like, judging real talent, I mean, the NBA Summer, like, the NBA, we all know during the regular season, the defense is suffering. The NBA Summer League? Holy shit. It was like an audition to be in White Men Can't Jump. When I auditioned to be in White Men Can't Jump, before we even read for the director, all the actors went out there and played. We were playing basketball. It's like, yo, let me do my thing. You do your thing. That's what it was like. That's what it reminded me of. Like, yo, let me just score a little baskets, you know, try to shine. So, and then I'll let you do the same thing.
That was some bad basketball in White Men Can't Jump.
Terrible.
That was some terrible.
And I know you didn't read my book. You didn't read my book, but I break down. I have the first ever celebrity scouting report. I go over all the people I've seen play ball, celebrities, actors, rappers, and I evaluate their talent very, very diligently.
Who would be the, if they rebooted White Men Can't Jump and did it again, give me the black actor and the white actor. The
Michael
Snipes.
B. Jordan would be the black actor.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
The white actor. You know, I don't know. I'd hope it could be somebody, maybe somebody like, man, like Ryan Gosling would be good because he's got a funny sense of humor in that dry way. I know he can't play.
I was going to say Gyllenhaal because he can.
He'd be good. He has that kind of way about him too.
Yeah.
But one of those guys would be good. One of those guys would be good. But I'm just plugging my book because I know you didn't get a chance to read it. Chris, you're going to fucking love it. You are going to fucking love it. But let's talk about the current NBA. But I had to plug myself because, you know, because Chris needed the book sent to him for free. He couldn't spend the $19. He needed it for free. He couldn't even download the audio book. He needed it sent to free. But you know what, Chris? But since you didn't have it for free and I've come on the show and I'm plugging myself, which is so rude. And then, like, I'm so embarrassed to have to do that. This is one thing we're going to agree on. Before you even read it, you're going to go on Amazon and give it a 5-star beautiful review. Deal?
Deal.
I'll
do it before the end of this podcast.
Fuck yeah.
Support for the Vertical Podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
One quick finisher on Lonzo Ball. My question with Lonzo is, how long can he handle all this? How long can he deal with the constant LaVar Ball talking, media asking him? It's a lot of pressure to feel on a day. Like, maybe he can, it'll be fine for a month or even a year.
Right.
But if this continues for his entire career, you got to have a real tough mental mindset to be able to do that for your entire career.
Well, I will say this, and I'm gonna give it two parts of this. I have no idea how long it'll take. He is 19, but I don't qualify the age of professional basketball players. You knew what you were getting yourself into. You're now a professional basketball player. You're being paid. So your age doesn't, like, they're like, well, he's only a kid. Well, then you could have stayed at UCLA. You chose to come to the NBA. It was obviously a plan. You earned that right to do that. So, he's just a kid. No longer just a kid. You're now an NBA starting point guard for one of the perennial franchises in all of sports. How long it'll last, I don't know. At a certain point, probably, who knows? I honestly don't know. It's hard for me to say what's going to happen. From all intents and purposes, from what I heard, even from my man Ruco, who he's going to be like, you were talking shit about me. You know, he's a good kid. You know, he's obviously knows what he's doing. He's low-key. He's well-mannered. He's, you know, got, you know, class and all that stuff. I don't know. He's going to have to figure that out with his father. They're going to be figuring this out in the public eye, apparently, because, you know, they got the other son at UCLA who you never hear a word from. And then the other one who just dropped out of high school and who's going to be homeschooled because he's supposed to be the next, one who's better than Steph Curry also.
You know, like, not to pivot too far off topic, but you know who could be the next, like, high school superstar that maybe people aren't talking about with an NBA pedigree is Giannis's brother. Giannis's youngest brother is playing out in the Milwaukee area, and he is supposed to be really freaking good.
Like, he lives out there with him?
There's like a couple of them. There's one that's in college. There's one that's even younger. I'm blanking on their first names, but the youngest one is what I hear could be the next Giannis-level player. That's the guy to keep your eye on.
And Bol Bol, Manu Bol's son, is supposed to be really good.
Yeah, like there's a lot of guys with NBA pedigrees. But you had asked me about, and this makes me easy to transition to something I want to talk about with the Knicks. Asked me about the who I think would be the best point guard to emerge in this class, and it's very early with that, understood. But man, summer league, preseason, early season, Dennis Smith Jr.
Right.
looks really, really good. And this is the guy, Mike,
I know,
that the Knicks walked away from. And look, last time you were on this podcast, I went back and listened to it. Last time you were on the podcast, you were defensive of Phil Jackson.
I know.
So I'll ask you this. Are the Knicks in a better spot with Phil Jackson gone?
The Knicks are in a better spot, yes, with Phil Jackson gone. It was really, really disappointing for me and for all the fans. And we could say what we want to say about Carmelo's flaws, doesn't play defense, hold the ball, whatever. Nobody deserved to be treated the way Carmelo was treated, including Kristaps Porzingis. Nobody. So, yeah, I think we're in a better position. But the Knicks can't even clean house the right way. Why the fuck is Kurt Rambis still a part of the Knicks coaching staff? Why don't we clean house once and for all? And you know, the Frank Nicolina thing, who the hell knows if he could play? I'm not going to sit here and say I knew who the hell he was before the draft. He's hurt. I don't know. But to answer your question, I think we are better because the Phil Jackson thing was bad. It was extremely dysfunctional and very unprofessional and unfair and mean. It was fucking mean.
Well, the staffing part of it, I agree with. The Knicks don't seem to be, like, even bringing in Scott Perry. What they did with Scott Perry is they bring him into the mix, and they don't fire anybody there. They don't clean house in any way, shape, or form. They just let Scott Perry bring in a bunch of his own guys. So now you just overcrowd that front office. And it's the same thing on the bench. You still have Kurt Rambis there, a mixture of the old guard and Jeff Hornacek's guys there. It still is a jumbled mess. But the bigger, more short-term problem is they let Phil Jackson draft Frank Ntilikina. And look, he might be okay. He's battling an injury right now. But Dennis Smith Jr., taking one pick after, is the more looks like the more talented guy. And based on the draft people I talked to, there was plenty of questions about Dennis Smith Jr. He was a immature kid at the end at NC State. But from a purely a talent perspective, he was the better player. And the Knicks drafted him in no small part to the fact that Phil Jackson thought that Frank Ntilikina is a better fit in the triangle than Dennis Smith Jr. would be, or anybody else would be. And that, to me, is mind-numbing. If you knew on any level that Phil might be on his way out the door, you can't allow him to make that important a draft pick.
I totally agree, man. I totally agree. Yo, where I stand on the Knicks, Chris, I'm done. I'm never going to not be a Knicks fan. Like, I thought for a second I'll just not be a Knicks fan. But I'm always going to – it's in my heart. But after the Charles Oakley incident, and I know Oak ain't a saint, but the way that was handled, how it was handled, and everything that way it was handled afterward, and the irony of the whole thing, I'm finished. I'm not going back into Madison Square Garden for a basketball game until Charles Oakley is allowed back in Madison Square Garden for a basketball game. And it's not like I'm missing out. It's not like I'm like white knuckling it in my band on the Knicks is like shit, you know, like, oh, they're so good. So it is an easy thing to play out. But for myself, as a Knicks fan, as a true blue Knicks fan, as a guy that spent a year fucking making a 30 for 30, and pouring my every single ounce of my fandom into it, I'm so sick of being the brunt of the fucking jokes. I am so sick of the dysfunction. I'm so sick season after season of having to learn and memorize a new fucking lineup. I don't know who the fucking Knicks are. I'm so embarrassed that the preseason, the biggest talk of the preseason was how weird and wacky Michael fucking Beasley's conversation with the media are. That was like our preseason hype. The other teams are like, this is our lineup. You know, we have this guy, we have that guy. Minnesota has this guy, that guy. You know, OKC is it. That was like our cool, fun thing. Mike Beasley is nuts, and we're going to put him on every single interview to show how nuts he is, and that's how we're going to sell tickets. This is what the fuck we're at? Mike Beasley giving the theory of using 10% of your brain or more?
Yeah.
I know, and it sounds nuts, but it's like, I can't do it. I can't continue to do it to myself. There's so much going on in the NBA. There's so many players to watch. There's so much storylines to watch. You know, the love, the hate, LeBron. You know, the big three, the not big three, the Lonzo, all that shit. There's the Dennis Smiths, the Markelle Fultz, the Joel Embiids, the Orlando crew, the fucking Brooklyn Nets, D'Angelo Russell. Like, you know, it's like there's so much going on in the NBA. It's like, I'm not getting emotionally involved with this Knicks team. I don't care who they are. I don't care who the fucking coaches are. I don't know why Kurt Rambis is a Knicks assistant coach. And I don't know why Kurt Rambis hasn't shaved his fucking hair yet. Why hasn't Kurt Rambis shaved his hair? Why?
Just go completely...
Shave your fucking hair. You'd look cool. He'd look like an old rock and roller hippie dude who went bald. He's got the goatee, the thick horn-rimmed glasses, and a bald head. That would fucking be cool. You look fucking nuts, Kurt. You look crazy.
I will say this about the Knicks, though, that at the very least, do you think they're making the move in the right direction?
I have no idea. You tell me. I'm going to pose it on you because you're an expert. You tell me.
I would say that at least with this youth movement, by moving Carmelo, by ending that era, Joakim Noah is the last piece of that puzzle that's going to have to go. Mm-hmm. You're at least committed to a direction. And look, I don't necessarily trust the people in charge there yet to make the right decisions on personnel, but by going kind of this under 25 and under route, committing, we hope, to building an offense around Kristaps Porzingis, allowing Hornacek to get away from any remnants of the triangle offense for the first time in look, living in New York for 15 years, for the first time in 15-plus years, that's a team with at least some direction here. I think I think I get which way that they're trying to go. They have a long way to go to get there, and idiot contracts, like, I mean, forget Tim Hardaway. That contract aside, there wasn't a team in the league giving Ron Baker more than the minimum to play for them this past year. The Knicks basically gave him a two-year, multi-million dollar deal. If they can clean up some of these decisions, I at least like the direction. And because the lottery changes are coming, not this coming year, but the year after, this might be the best possible year to kind of bottom out, get a top five pick, and get one of these Michael Porters or Marvin Bagleys or somebody that lands there. So at a bare minimum, and it is just a minimum, I see some direction from the Knicks.
I agree with you on that completely. I agree with you on that. I agree.
Can a Knicks fan though become a Nets fan like yourself?
I can enjoy the Nets. I mean, I could support the Nets and enjoy them, and I could get the same fucking elation that I would get from the Knicks beating Cleveland as I got from the Nets beating them last night. And you know, I grew up spending a lot of time in Brooklyn, and you know, it's a weird, very New York thing, but I know a lot of people that work in the Barclays Arena. I do love D'Angelo, and I like the grit of that team from what I've seen so far, and I can enjoy and support and appreciate and root for the Nets, and I always rooted for the Nets since they moved to Brooklyn, and even when they were in Jersey. You know, I'm not a church and state dude, and there's not like that line in the sand like the Yankees-Mets. When the Nets were kicking ass and making it to the finals, I'm rooting for the fucking Nets when they were in Jersey. Mm-hmm. So when they moved to Brooklyn, yo, I'm like, yo, good, do your thing. So I support the Nets, and I want to see them do good. It's not that I want to see the Knicks do bad. I just have detached with love. Yeah. Does it sound like I've detached with love?
A little bit.
Does it sound like I've worked through it, or does it sound like I've detached with not so much love?
Yeah, I don't think you've worked through it. I'll say that.
I understand that. Fine. I that's why I was putting it out there, because I know I'm lying if I say I detached with a full open pouring heart of love.
Well, they've got to figure Porzingis out. And
what do you think of Porzingis?
I love him. I think he should be a center full time. I don't see. It's almost like when Dwight Howard came into the league, Dwight was very resistant to being a five. He was resistant. He wanted to play, I think it was alongside Gortat at that time in Orlando, and everybody knew his long-term position was at a five. I've long believed that Porzingis can change the center position in the same way that Dirk Nowitzki changed power forward. He could just be this ridiculous freak. I think you've got to start him now at the five. And look, there are the occasions against these big, big teams that you can put Porzingis back at the four. But do you really want a 7'3" power forward in a league that gets smaller every single year? I don't. I think you got to play him at the five and let him be a matchup nightmare for everybody.
I agree. Well, what do you think how good is he going to be, barring injury?
I think he has Hall of Fame talent. I really do.
I agree.
I think it's all there. Every piece. He's not a great three-point shooter yet, but I think with practice and with time, he's going to be. Look, he I don't know if he took a step back, but he certainly didn't help himself by being a part of a dysfunctional team this summer. If he was on, like put him on Oklahoma City this past summer.
Right.
Like, he doesn't spend the entire offseason overseas. He probably spends a good chunk of it in Oklahoma working with the team. Same thing with a San Antonio or any of the other functional organizations that are out there. By having to deal with a front office that was, you know, when Phil was there, you know, didn't really like him all that much. And
crazy.
And a front office. Yeah, a front office in flux. That didn't help his development. So the Knicks have to get on the same page with him and have him around New York or around this area year-round working on his game.
I agree. That's a good point. He deserves better. You know, they should fucking try to sue Phil for breach of contract.
No, I think he walked away from all that cash.
Yeah, I know.
Let me finish with the Knicks on Oakley.
Jesus, okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Do you think that that'll ever get resolved? Do you think there'll ever be a time when James Dolan and Charles Oakley sit side by side again?
Oakley ain't sitting side by side with him. He ain't going to sit. I'm speaking from based on the little that I know. I know Charles a little bit. I don't think he'll sit side by side from him. I think listen, he's our guy, and he's been made into an even more fan favorite because of the Knicks sucking and the incident that happened. He's always going to be beloved, as all those 90s Knicks were, because for all their flaws and for all, the fact that we didn't win a ring, they were our guys, and they represented the good, the bad, the dysfunction of New York, and all of them. They all had a workman's mentality. Patrick, the late great Anthony Mason, Xavier, Luttrell, and fucking, are the most dysfunctional out of all of them, John Starks. And although we came up short, at least we went out on our shield. And, just like the 1970 Knicks represented New York, it's like you had Willis Reed, he had that Oakley thing. He had that workman's mentality. You had Clyde, who represented like the Madison Avenue, the Flash. You had Bill Bradley, who represented the sort of higher ups. You had, Dave DeBuscher. They had a thing that New York connected with. And that 90s Knicks, those 90s Knicks teams had the same thing. So as far as Oak and Dolan, who's to say? I highly doubt it'll be that. Hopefully they'll come to some sort of, terms, because it is something that other fans, feel. I might be the sort of most vocal one because, I have a forum, but other fans feel the same way. It really resonated with me, and, it bothered me a lot. Getting to spend time with Oak over the summer with the big three and just, sort of reaching my tipping point. It just really was ironic that it was Charles Oakley, the guy that was out there diving on the floor, grabbing rebounds, setting picks, was essentially the fan, because he paid for his own tickets that night. He was the fan that wound up flipping out on Dolan, because we all would. In some way. Doesn't mean threaten him, fight him. It's not that. But you all want to go up to Charles, to James Dolan and be like, what the fuck have you done? What the fuck have you done, man? Why are you even here? Why are you sitting courtside? Why do you look miserable all the time? Shave your fucking beard. You're not in a blues band. Okay? Look what the fuck you've done. And Oakley did it. And it's just so ironic to me. Because somebody who was so beloved by the fans actually did what all fans, if they had the opportunity, the balls, and the situation, would want to do it in whatever way, shape, or form.
Do you think, though, and look, James Dolan lacks more self-awareness than any owner I've come across in the NBA, but does Oakley have any responsibility in escalating this? Not just that what happened on
that
night. Yeah.
Of course he does. Listen, Oakley ain't a victim. He's the victim, but Oakley's not a saint. So, yeah, he has responsibility in that, and he'll have to work that out on his own. I'm not going to speak on his behalf at all, but of course he does. Of course he totally does. Of course he does. And the way it happened that night and the way it's continued, he does have responsibility in that.
Yeah. So the big three's back next year. Are you back with it? Or what's going
Big three is back next year, and I'm going to be back with it. It's going to be bigger.
I'm surprised. Jay Williams got hurt, right? Jason Williams.
Jason Williams, White Chocolate, got hurt.
I'm a little surprised nobody else had a massive injury during that. These guys are old, man.
Yeah, they're not that old. There was a few of them. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf was the oldest, and he was one of the best players.
Yeah.
But the majority of them are in their 30s. But Jason Williams' injury was bound to happen. He's never had an injury during his career. White Chocolate. And, Corey Maggette had an injury, but he's always been injured. Unfortunately, that was the only one. But, after that first game in Brooklyn and Barclays, everybody, including the fans and more importantly, the players, realized this isn't no charity game. This isn't no This isn't the Harlem Globetrotters. No disrespect to the Globetrotters. These dudes are out there playing. And by week four, the games were very intense. They were extremely physical. And dudes wanted to win. And you know, and I was around it. And they had a great time. But there was no... They were playing. They were competing. And you know, and it was a great thing for the crowd, for the crowds that were there. The fans love it. Next year, the games are going to be live. And the Big Three is back. And despite all the player hating from ESPN, who I'm sure, you know, I have no idea, and I'm speaking just for myself, I'm sure they had an opportunity. They could have, you know, been the ones to broadcast it despite their little, you know, subtweets and talking shit and some of the other people that wanted to see it fail. It didn't fail, and it's back, and it's going to continue to do good, and there's going to be bigger names, and then the fans are going to be back next year, and I'm happy because Ice Cube and the people that signed on first, the Kenya Martins, the Steven Jacksons, you know, even with Allen's, you know, craziness and the Oaks and the Dr. J's, why would you want to see something like that fail? It's fucking, it's Ice Cube. He's a goddamn, like, fucking cultural icon. Why would you, like, root against something with Ice Cube? Why would you root against something with Dr. J and Kenyon Martin? I just didn't understand it. So I was happy to be sort of a part of this underdog thing, and we climbed up the hill, and we put the big three flag, and we're back next year. It's going to, you know, be even bigger and better, and the games being live are going to, you know, bring a broader audience and even more hype to it.
Sounds like Stephon Marbury could be in it next year, too, if he gets what he wants.
He would. That would be great. That would be fun.
I could see him playing well. That's a Stephon Marbury. He could be a big star in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not naming some of the other names that I've heard of sign up. That's not my place. And I don't know if Steph is one of them, but I just have heard about Steph. But the Big Three is going to continue to be a fun league, and it will definitely continue to be way more competitive than the NBA Summer League. And I asked the dudes on camera and off camera, I said, yo, I asked Sean Stevenson, I asked Coutinho, I asked Kenyon and them, and I said to them, yo, do you think that if we took the best dudes from the Big Three versus, you know, the best dudes from the Summer League and everybody got a chance to get in shape, could they beat them? They said, without even question, they'd beat their asses. Well, that's what they said. And I agree.
In 5-on-5? Or
5-on-5.
Full court?
Full court.
Some of these guys might be a little old for that, though, Mike. I don't know.
To play against 19-year-old guys that don't know how to play?
Half dicey.
Of the Summer League will be out of the NBA.
Well, you said the best of, right? You said the best of the Big Three.
Get them.
The best of.
Bring them. Get them.
I mean, there's some top picks in that.
Get them.
Like, you put, like, Tatum in get healthy Fultz.
I got Deshaun Stevenson. Deshaun Stevenson would have... I'm assigning Deshaun Stevenson to guard Lonzo Ball. That's first off the top. Deshaun Stevenson's guarding Lonzo Ball. That's my number one assignment right there. And your whole team is all fucked up.
Quickly, you see David Stern advocating for the legalization, or not legalization, but allowing of marijuana in the NBA. What do you think?
I love David Stern. And I think it's great that he's saying that now, but I think it's easy for him to say that now that he's just the former commissioner.
Yeah.
So whether it'll happen or, you know, that'll, you know, invoke some more conversation about it, let them do their thing.
They should. I mean, look.
The NBA is the NFL.
True, because it's an actual use for it, I think, in the NFL as some kind of painkiller. But in the NBA, they're terrible at testing for it. Guys know when they're going to get tested, and the fact that they don't pop more people is astonishing to me anyway.
I agree. I think they should let them. You know, it's legal, and, you know, listen, we got a president who is off the fucking rails. If these guys want to smoke weed, let them smoke weed. It should be allowed. They have to just figure out a way, like, you don't, you know, it should be, like, private. It shouldn't be like, oh, I smoked weed before the game. Like, they have to figure out a way to...
Well, that was the problem that Stern kind of alluded to it. He said that players were coming to him or coming to the league and saying that guys were high before games. I've heard of stories, actually a lot of stories of guys getting high before games, even when there was testing for this stuff. I mean, that's something that's going to have to be worked out. You can't have players high before games.
I totally agree.
I don't know how you legislate it where you say guys are how you punish it if they get caught, but some got worked out. But I do think they should make it legal for the NBA.
I totally agree. Let them do their thing.
All right, the book is this book has balls, sports rants from the MVP of Talking Trash. You can catch Mike over at Barstool Sports, his podcast over there, White Famous on Showtime. Mike, always great to talk to you, man. I appreciate you dropping by.
I appreciate it too, Chris. And if I check out the Amazon review, yours is like it's overwhelmingly sick even before you read it because you were too cheap to buy the book, and which I get it, before I came on the show too. I imagine this is going to be like definitely one of the best podcasts of the year for your podcast. Your podcast is fucking dope. I'm a fan of it. And to come and be a part of it, shit, man. I mean, this is like I'm actually part of the painting.
Such a prick. I told you I bought the goddamn book. It just didn't come in time.
Okay, but the review, is the review up, and is it like
the
five
review is,
gleaming
review
stars?
Is not up, but there will be five gleaming stars within the hour,
I promise you. Chris, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you having me on. I am a fan. Keep doing your thing, and you know I would love to come back. And
you got it, Mike.
We'll talk more in 6 months and see if with the Alonzo Ball experiment is still happening.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk again when LeBron's in the finals for the
for sure. I'll have my broom and plunger ready.
Great stuff, Mike. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for downloading this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
He hasn't really distinguished himself.
Chris is in desperate need of validation.
I think your opinion is shared by everyone.
So please, subscribe, like, comment.
I would punch him. That's just my opinion.
At your earliest convenience in the iTunes store.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis. Or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.